You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm in the studio with Brittany Spanos and Rob Sheffield. We are going to talk about the best songs of 2019, and that'll probably broaden out to the best music of 2019. We're going to try not to linger too much over things we've already talked about on the podcast because we've done various updates throughout last year. But, you know, if we repeat, we repeat. It's good to have you both on here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And Rob, you were saying you're already looking forward to looking back at 2019. You're already feeling, the new big thing is 2019 nostalgia.
Absolutely. And in terms of year where quality of music like compares sharply to quality of literally everything else, it's one of those years.
That is a very fair point. Maybe we could do something hard and try to sum up what 2019 was in songs and music. Rob, go.
It's super hard. Oh my gosh. I guess.
If anyone could do it, we'd have just anyone up.
On the positive side, like the fact that, you know, a teenager from Atlanta with no job, no prospects, no resume whatsoever, just comes out of nowhere, finds a Nine Inch Nails banjo sample that he leases for $30 and turns it into the biggest hit of all time. That's a beautiful thing. In terms of like something that could only happen in music and could only happen now, it's a beautiful thing.
I know a 7-year-old who could not believe that Old Town Road was a new song, that it hadn't been around, that it wasn't some kind of like folk song like This Land Is Your Land. True story.
It already seems like it is.
Yeah. Old Town Road is my favorite Pete Seeger song.
Actually, in the upcoming Bob Dylan biopic, in order to make it seem more contemporary, they're just kind of insert that in.
Yeah.
As a folk
standard.
Can't
wait for Timotei's cover.
Absolutely. Yes. Got no stress. I've been through all that. Like a Marlboro man, I just kick on back. Brian, wish I could take it old time to the old time road.
It's the old weird yeehaw agenda. But, okay, Brittany, do the same. Do the same impossible thing. What was 2019 in music to you?
I mean, I think that it's become more of a thing for the last, you know, 5-ish, 10 years where it's definitely a lack of an overarching trend or overarching sound that's happening. And I think this year was really where it was put to the test. I think past years, at least, you know, there's at least been like one popular trend that's kind of hit most of the top singles, you know, especially in the last couple of years. It's been from trap, and a lot of rap subgenres have been sort of the big through line in everything. But this year it was all over the place. I mean, every number one song, every major radio hit, every album from artists. I mean, I think there's a lot of really great career albums from pop artists especially, but none of them, like, they could have been any random year. Like, there's no 2019 sound.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, the center could not hold, but it really was kind of a great thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of really strong albums and songs from every artist and a lot of really great singles that feel like timeless singles for a lot of artists, which is really cool and happening at once, but also like, you could tell me any year that they came out and I would have been like, sure.
Let's make both of you happy and start with a Harry Styles song.
Absolutely.
What have we done to deserve this, Brian? Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
Well, also, since we were begging you to tell us just one thing about the music you heard and you wouldn't tell us, so now that we've heard it, we can talk at least about the song that's on your list.
Sorry, I felt like Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now. I'm not disposed to discuss that album if it did exist, sir. Yes, well, as we all know now, fantastic album. Really like a cover all the bases sort of pop masterpiece. I'm sure Brittany concurs.
I do.
But Lights Up specifically was the one that I think made your list and the collective Rolling Stone list. Yeah. Maybe you guys can talk about, once we get to the meat of the song, maybe you guys could talk about what you see the influences are on this particular song and this particular sound, because there's tracks that are more like this, there's tracks that are more kind of like,
yeah,
mellow rock classicist. But yeah, sorry Harry, I'll let you sing. Sorry about
way more pop than his debut. It's a lot looser. It's interesting how a lot of the lyrics are kind of these breakup songs, and they're kind of him analyzing the end of a relationship and also how he acted in a relationship, but they are very much more upbeat, a lot more, you know, again, a lot more pop stuff. I think Adore You is probably my favorite song from the album. Kind of has gone back and forth between Adore You and Cherry, but I love the kind of upbeat, dancey, summery pop of this album.
Yeah, it's very, very emotional. Very disco, and not just in terms of like the percussion, but also just, you know, the emotional stepping into the light. Lights Up reminds me a bit of a Sade song, you know, from like the Sweetest Taboo kind of era of Sade, which is the highest compliment for me.
I got a little Robbie Williams.
Totally, totally.
Yeah.
And the version he did on Saturday Night Live, just stripped down to just piano acoustic, showing that, you know, turning it into a totally different song. It's just really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we move from Harry to his opening act for part of his tour next year, which is among the coolest things I've heard recently, an amazing choice, Jenny Lewis, who I'm a total Jenny Lewis stan and have been for a very long time. She's one of the last classic rockers. She is as good as, you know, any sort of like 70s singer-songwriter you can name. She's both highly rated and yet underrated. And this whole album is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, I think, a couple songs between the Rolling Stone list and our list. Wasted Youth is, I think, the first single from the album. And that song breaks my heart a little bit. And it's so cheery about it, you know, and there's some lines that just like tear at your soul.
Yeah, very forgiving song. Very intense.
In the running for best bridge of the year, there's a lot of Taylor Swift bridges that are in sharp competition among other people.
Oh, we will come to those Taylor bridges.
Yeah.
Taylor was like, oh, you know what? Bridges? You thought I was good at bridges? I'm going to give you an entire album of bridges. I love how it's perfect double bill, Jenny Lewis and Harry Styles, two artists with very different audiences who would nonetheless, like all Jenny Lewis fans would love the Harry Styles record and all Harry Styles fans would love the Jenny Lewis record.
Yeah.
And for such a seemingly disparate pairing, it's really kind of perfect.
Also very similar aesthetics for these album rollouts. A lot of sequins from both of them. So I'm going to enjoy a very sparkly show from the two.
Also, both fetishistic about the room where Carole King recorded Tapestry, because when, you know, Harry played me his album for the first time, he really wanted it to be in the room, in the actual studio within the studio, the actual room where Carole King made Tapestry. And then I saw that Jenny Lewis actually recorded her album in that room on the same piano that Carole King used. These guys, very much kindred spirits across the years. And also both, at this point, they're both artists with very long, very fruitful careers.
Yeah.
They both have lots of bangers.
So the album is on the line. The other song that I think made one of the lists is Red Bull and Hennessy, also an amazing song.
Yeah,
so good.
That's my favorite from the album.
Is this her best album?
I mean, I'm a big fan. I don't know if I could ever let go of Rabbit Fur Coat.
Oh, I love The Voyager. The Voyager is my favorite Jenny album.
The thing is, like, she's so good that we can have this argument.
Yes.
I mean, Rabbit Fur Coat, to me, is like, you know, it's one of the best albums of all time. It's just stunning, and it kind of stands alone because she didn't quite return to that sound. It has those backing vocals that are amazing. But this is certainly a good runner for her best album. She's, again, like a major and underrated artist, because she also kind of just doesn't give a shit in a totally Gen X kind of way. Like she's not out there flogging herself. Like, you know, you just have to realize how awesome she is.
When she does something at all, it's something from the heart. But honestly, like this, I might call this my favorite Jenny Lewis album. And for somebody who's been doing it for 20 years to make an album that at least is a very credible contender for their best.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And just casually have Ringo Starr and drums on it.
Amazing, right?
Because why not? Who doesn't?
Also, like, that she's repping Gen X is definitely a compliment to Gen X, considering the other lifers who insist on going on repping Gen X. Like, it's a credit to the Gen. You mentioned Lizzo. I got to give, like, Britney, like, unbelievable. Britney's always way ahead of everybody else when it comes to, like, discovering what's cool. But Britney was literally the first person who ever loved Truth Hurts, you know? Like, the whole world takes years to catch up with where Britney was 3 years ago. Amazing.
It's a great song. I'm glad it finally got its due. I'm glad that someone great, film about a Rolling Stone writer, brought it
amazing
back to life.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad that song definitely blew up, and I think it was time.
Absolutely.
And Rob, consistent to his theory that a song counts for a list in the year that it made its impact has put this 2-year-old song on his list of the best songs of 2019, which makes sense.
And it's something you hear in the wild all the time. It's on the radio all the time. You hear it in the supermarket all the time. And it definitely does not sound dated. And it's kind of thing like you hear it and think, oh my God, I love this one. And it's funny to think that this is an artist who's done so much stuff since then, you know?
And it fits into 'Cause I Love You, her album. Like, it doesn't feel like you said, like, it doesn't feel dated. Like, it doesn't feel like it's outside of an era in heavy air quotations around it. But, like, I think kind of using that sort of as one of the great songs of this year, even though it's 2 years old, works.
Absolutely. Could have had Juice. How great is the Harry Styles version of Juice?
So good.
A perfect cover.
Yeah, what's your pick from this actual album? Because as people should understand, that song was not from her new album.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say my favorite from the album is Jerome. I think that one's great. I think it's so super good. Fun. Her voice sounds incredible. I think that the lyrics are so conversational across the entire album, but that song especially, to turn a ballad into this kind of like funny, just like really kind of like a little mean and also really just like cheeky and great. So it's lovely. Take
your ass home. One of the year's absolute best albums that we haven't actually talked much about on the show is by Lana Del Rey. And The Greatest is the song that I think made both the collective list and the Rob list. And it is definitely among the greatest songs called The Greatest.
It is the greatest of greatest. It is so great. And even on an album as like jam-packed as the Lana Del Rey album, that one is just...
It's like an album full of just like really epic closing songs for albums. Like every time I listen to it, I'm like, oh yeah, this is like the last song. Every time I listen to The Greatest, especially, I'm like, this is the last song of the album. I'm like, no, there's like still Happiness as a Butterfly. There's still like Hope is a Dangerous Thing for a Woman to Have, but I have it, which great title. But it's just like full of these like really epic, long, kind of just drawn out power ballads, and it's perfect. But The Greatest is, I mean, lyrically and also just sonically, just like peak Lana, everything that she's sort of been building towards for years. Those nights were on
fire, we couldn't get higher, we didn't know that we... I have to admit, when everyone was talking about World War III the other day, the lines, the culture is lit, and if this is it, I had a ball, definitely went through my head. I hate to say it, but...
I mean, what a world-burning song.
I have to say, like, in terms of a song that sounds like absolutely
that
of the moment.
An apocalypse, like, soundtrack, if I've ever heard one.
Yes. Oh, look, the live stream's almost on. Like,
that's going to be when the president gives his farewell address while the missile's in the air. He's going to quote that.
Yeah.
If the world makes it to a remake of Doctor Strangelove, that'll be the song playing at the end as Slim Pickens rides the missile down.
I mean, it's just so good. I mean, this entire album, I've been a fan of Lana since Born to Die, but I think that she's an artist who has very visibly grown with every single album. Like every time a new album of hers comes out, I'm like, oh, this is her best one yet. Like this is legitimately like, this is like everything that she's been working towards. But Norman fucking Rockwell is just like above and beyond. And every song in there is great.
Also, I thought we were talking before about how, you know, this year people got so fetishistic about Laurel Canyon, 70s California pop, like Jenny Lewis and Harry Styles and Taylor Swift and everybody. And Lana was like, yeah, I'm going to make all those records at the same time. It's unbelievable. Like, you think of like entire careers that are encapsulated within just, you know, this song alone.
And Taylor had a really great quote during an award show where she said that Lana, and she specifically pointed her out as one of the most influential artists of the past decade. It's so true. I mean, every single pop artist has bitten off of Lana's entire thing.
I would also posit, I was really thinking about, I think Taylor's right, but I was also really thinking about what that meant for Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to say about Lana is that when the album came out, and it's kind of like she showed her hand as far as how incredibly smart she is on this. And people were like, oh my God, she's kind of like Father John Misty. Wait, she actually said that in her Rolling Stone cover story, however many years ago, when we talked about it, she said the contemporary artist that she feels she had the most in common with was Father John Misty. And I think this album really kind of shows where she was coming from with that, in case anyone had any doubts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, anything else on The Greatest before we move on?
It's perfect.
It's perfect. Also just that great 70s LA tradition of the end of the world song, which, you know, those people were all obsessed with. which I'm sure had nothing to do with the drugs that they were all doing at the time, which I'm sure Lana's not doing at all. But that's such a perfect aspect of the genre to focus in on super laser-like and do, I'm going to do the end of the world song for all end of the worlds.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my favorite cultural theses is the idea that the 70s never ended, which is kind of most brilliantly put forth by the book Nixonland. This sort of feeling of decline of the 70s, the feeling of you know, especially in America, that the best days are behind us, that there's a recession, that everything's shrinking, that anything in between that felt like a break from that was only a break, and that we're sort of back mentally. So it's very interesting that we have artists hearkening back to the 70s. What else? There's so much between Rob's list and the Rolling Stone list. Where should we go? What song do you want to talk about?
We're talking about Lana and Lana's and Taylor calling Lana the most influential pop artist of the decade. What's the best song on the Taylor album?
That's a really tough one. I mean, for me, it's between Cruel Summer and the title track. But then there's a lot of... what about you?
Those are definitely my top two. I think that Cruel Summer is like maybe by a hair my favorite, because I feel like there's a lot of songs that I loved, but like that was the first one that I really immediately loved a lot. And I think the title track, which speaking of like Rabbit Fur Coat, sounds so much like Rabbit Fur Coat. Mm. But I love that song, and I think that with every listen I grow to love it more, and it feels like her like most instantly classic song from the album.
Yeah, classic and such a surprise when it dropped. It's funny because this album, there's so much, when I was updating my list of like all the Taylor Swift songs, mm-hmm. but it was funny that I kept thinking like, okay, like I really am I just like so blown away by the new songs, but there's just, you know, both Cruel Summer and Lover are both in the top five. Those are just like perfect Taylor Swift songs.
Yeah. And also, I mean, an album full of bridges, the Cruel Summer bridge is number one.
Yes.
I know she loves the Lover bridge, but the Cruel Summer bridge is just, it's perfect.
Yeah. The bridges are just kind of crazy. Also, because the songs aren't that long, but they seem super like epic just because she puts a 90-second bridge in a 3-minute song.
Yeah.
I must say we did do an entire episode about the Taylor Swift album. So as much as my own instinct is to linger here, but let's just grab the wheel and steer us away by Taylor. Let's just randomly, Tower of the Creator made a really strong album that it took me a while to, his fans were convinced it's like a masterpiece and his best album ever. It took me a while to kind of warm to it. Certainly his song Earthquake is really good.
Yeah. No, it's really, yeah.
Did that make your list? You're like, eh. But I mean, he's kind of edging into that Frank Ocean territory, and it's worth hearing at least. Mm-hmm. And let's veer into a band that Rob likes a lot called Mannequin Pussy, who are awesome.
They are awesome, yes.
I think they're another one who like have one song on the main list, one song on your list. But tell us a little bit about this band.
Until now, they're from Philly. Until now, they're pretty much like they made hardcore records. Their records were, you know, 20 minutes where like each song was like a minute or so of like bam, bam, bam. Fantastic songwriters in that format. And this time she set out to write bridges and choruses. She, you know, she said Taylor was a big influence on this album, as well as Lady Antebellum and the, you know, the Dixie Chicks. She was trying to write that kind of song in a punk rock format. And so a song like, you know, Drunk Too, which is just absolutely perfect breakup song.
That's the one where she's like, I was drunk, so I forgot that we broke up.
Yeah, I love that.
That song's hilarious, yeah.
Fantastic guitar, fantastic band. Just really like, also like a band that seemed like they had this zone where they were fantastic and they just stepped into a much bigger zone and with everything that was quirky and weird about them intact.
And from Normani, Rob picked Motivation. Would that have been your pick by her?
I love that song. I'm excited for everything that Normani is doing. And I think that she's going to be massive probably by the end of the year. I mean, she just released a really great song with Megan Thee Stallion last night. But she's just really, I don't know, she's really exciting. I think she's a great performer. Motivation, I mean, it's both like the video song combination is insane. I mean, the video has all these like throwback references to J-Lo and Britney Spears videos, and I mean her dancing is absolutely incredible, And Motivation's just really fun. It's a really fun pop song co-written by Ariana Grande, which is great. Just a really, it's a great debut, like solo song from her, as she's done like a lot of collaborations over the last couple of years.
You can really hear the Ariana-ness in there.
Yeah.
The Fifth Harmony legacy just keeps expanding.
They've all released solo songs now.
Yardbirds of the decade.
There's Claro. What's the deal with Claro?
Fantastic songwriter. Like another, like one of, you know, like so many great examples this year, like Lil Nas X or Billy, like this, you know, super young, basically like all they've got is like brilliant songs, and that's enough to make them a big deal. Like you can come out of nowhere and be pretty much a nobody with these great songs and still find your audience.
Karen O made an album with Danger Mouse that didn't make much of an impact on me. It sort of sounded too much like exactly what I imagined an album by Karen O and Danger Mouse would be like.
Yeah.
But this song that you picked out from it, when I listened to it on its own and fully Rob recommended, I was like, that's a cool song. I think it's called Woman.
Yeah, I love that song. Danger Mouse did something cool that he was just like making a science fiction movie starring Karen O. And, you know, she was scripting her role within that. And it was such a perfect mix of sensibilities. Mm-hmm. It was really kind of beautiful.
And Cash Shit by Megan Thee Stallion totally cracks me up. I think we may have talked about it on the when we did the best rap of the year so far, but she's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, and as Brittany said, you just released a song with Normani last night, almost as if in answer to our prayers.
I know. She's great. I'm so excited about everything that Meg's doing. And like, I really loved Hot Girl Summer, the song that she did with Nicki and Ty Dolla $ign. I think that was such a great way to sum up her own Hot Girl Summer and also the meme around it. And I think she's just really fun. And I mean, like, absolutely one of the best new rappers of the last few years. I think she's incredible.
How would you kind of differentiate her vibe from, there's been a lot of incredible female rappers the past mm-hmm. few years. Like, but she does have her own kind of niche. How would you, not to exclusively place her in that pantheon, but just maybe it's useful to kind of...
I mean, she's so Houston. I think she comes from the lineage of Houston rappers. And I think that she's like, I think that there hasn't been as many rappers from Houston to kind of break the charts and everything in the last few years, but I think she's kind of the one bringing that scene back. I think it's been very much like dominated by Atlanta and Chicago, and I think it's really great to see Houston kind of rise up again.
So good. And also, like, I love with her duet with DaBaby, like, it's funny because it's such a perfect early 2000s sort of, you know, like, heyday of Houston, heyday of North Carolina. And it was just like really amazing to see those sounds.
Yeah.
Not just reborn, but, you know, dueling it out together on the radio.
DaBaby, another person I absolutely love. Suge was one of my favorite songs this year.
So incredible.
Bop also. I mean, he's just such a delight. And like his appearance on SNL, like his performances on there were fantastic.
Both he and Megan are a little bit of return to bars too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I hate to say it, but they can rap, which I, you know, hip hop doesn't have to be just about that by any means, but I do enjoy that. I do enjoy rapping well in the context of rap. I know that's very retrograde to say, but.
Yeah. The first nigga play on my body, a nigga. I just check my balance. I probably pull up to your hood and come buy me a nigga. No cap. You know that your hoe told you that nigga crazy. Don't think that she lied to you, nigga.
Brittany, what else jumps to mind among your favorite songs, not to put you on the spot?
So two of my favorite songs, I don't know if they made our lists, but
doesn't
like
matter.
They were sort of like late entries for me. So Dua Lipa, Don't Start Now, maybe my favorite song from 2019. It came out in sort of Q4. It was like, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, Daft Punk wishes they had made this song. Like, it's so perfect. And it's like, she's someone who kind of hasn't entirely had her own personality in pop over the last few years. I think she's like such a talented singer, both live and on record. But like, I think that she's sort of done sort of what her producers that she's worked with and the collaborators kind of there, like working with Calvin Harris and people like that. Like, she's very pliable. And I think Don't Start Now is like, this is her. Like, this is like super disco funk. Like, her voice sounds incredible. Like, I would love her to just become like 2020 Donna Summer. Thinking about the way I want to sit the heartbreak, change me.
You know, on a mix, I might put that next to the Jonas Brothers Sucker.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Jonas Brothers, they had a big year.
Yeah,
I was very
excited. Let's open up. Let's crack open the door to that.
Well, yeah. They came back, and it's been the best thing that's ever happened to me. I love the Jonas Brothers. Happiness Begins was great. I think that album was fantastic. I mean, it's exactly what you'd want from them as they've grown up and kind of matured and done their own things musically. I loved Solo Nick and I loved Solo Joe, and I think that it's great to hear what they've concluded as artists and what they wanted to do and sort of making a really great pop rock album. And Sucker is just so fun and it's incredible. I'm glad it took off and I'm glad that they bigger than ever.
I think the experience of DNCE really played into what I've heard from this.
Yeah, I mean, DNCE was great. I think like people did not give them enough due, but like I'm glad that they kind of did like the Cake by the Ocean, really fun, just kind of wacky pop rock zone.
I'm looking forward to when they do their reunion.
Yeah,
you know, like
because they're still around. You know, the drummer from DNCE was the Jonas Brothers drummer back in the day, and now he's come back to the Jonas Brothers. I've been following along.
Maybe now that the Jonas Brothers have done their reunion, maybe, you know, the administration will get back together.
I know,
like all their bands will have their reunion time.
This is a little bit like if Led Zeppelin reunited, and you're like, but when is the Firm reunited?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, that's great and all, but what?
These crooked vultures, how long are you making us wait?
Rob wanted to talk about FKA Twigs.
What a great record. You know, we've been talking a lot about like breakup records people made in 2019, and she made these just absolutely epic breakup songs.
Which song or songs should we pick out?
I mean, Cellophane was, I mean, it's incredible.
It's hard to top Cellophane.
Mirrored Heart is probably my other big favorite from the album. I mean, just like so ornate and beautiful and just, yeah, really intricate and sad and kind of makes me want to cry every time I listen to them.
What do you hear? I hear a little Kate Bush.
Yeah.
Totally.
I sometimes hear Ray of Light era Madonna, which could not be, maybe it's just wishful thinking. What else do you hear influence-wise in the new Twigs album?
It's a very, like, specifically reminds me of the 90s trip-hop vibe. It reminds me very much of Portishead and Tricky and, you know, back when there were so many of those records and Morcheeba to Moloko, everybody making those records. It seems like FKA Twigs like really like focused in on this like particular time of like British spacey post-funk sci-fi kind of production and just really maximalized it emotionally.
This was not one of the tracks where I heard Ray of Light Era, but not just to be clear.
Kind of is though, right? Yeah. Like, this is a bit like Little Star. Like that's such a perfect record. Oh my God, Ray of Light.
Oh, yeah. No, when I interviewed Adele, I swear to God, we talked about Ray of Light for like 40 minutes because it turned out to be a big, like it was like a spiritual influence on her last album. Obviously not sonic, but she just. It's,
that makes so much sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's actually a great. I love when things are influencing something and you cannot hear it in the sound, but you know, your soul hears it. You feel it. Well, what else? I mean, I'll just play Almeida, the Salon song, which I'll just kind of stand for that. I love the chorus. I think that she's not, as Rob was saying during the break, she's not a singles artist.
I think of her as a long songs artist.
Yeah.
She's really good at stretching out and working an idea at length.
I just think her sort of brain for sounds and production, it's so particular and excellent. So if we got that, let's hear that. For the record, it's Rob who wanted to talk about Western Stars by Bruce Springsteen.
I love that song. I love that album. I would say it's an album that's underrated because it's by Bruce Springsteen. I feel like if somebody else made that record, it would have gotten maybe more admiration. But because we're so used to being dazzled by Springsteen doing something absolutely new every single year, I think it got slept on a bit. It's a really remarkable achievement even by his standards.
There Goes My Miracle is so good. It's
so
one of my favorite
songs.
Love the Roy Orbison vibes on it.
Yeah.
So good.
I'm still wondering whether he really pulled that off live in the movie or if they overdubbed it because, I mean, like, it has quite a melodic leap in the. It requires something of his voice that I wasn't sure if he can actually do. I mean, he's acknowledged that some of these songs are studio creations because he is 70 years old, and to get that kind, he could barely do that when he was 25. So
Roy Orbison could barely sing those songs. He could sing them about one out of every five times he tried them in the studio. Those records were studio creations too. He's absolutely like in a tradition that honestly, for me as a Springsteen fan, not at your encyclopedic level, but the man who literally wrote the book on Springsteen, but the book as far as I'm concerned. But I had no idea that he liked this kind of stuff, that he would want to do this kind of stuff, and that it's so against the grain from what people expected that I think people saw like, yeah, he's doing another thing that he's never done before, and it's a little overwhelming because he's done so much of that in the last few years between his book and his Broadway show.
I just want to go back and celebrate his very Taylor Swiftian rollout of Western Stars, where he just posted a lot of photos of California sunshine and like palm trees, which is exactly what Taylor did for the Lover rollout, God. Which I absolutely admired.
That's so true. Is this his Lover?
Yes. Actually,
maybe it's his Speak Now. It kind of sounds like Speak Now, yeah. Some of the songs.
I think like Hello, Tunnel Sunshine of Love is... and Lover have.
It's funny because like.
Just a recursive loop where we get you guys to compare Taylor Swift to Bruce Springsteen.
We didn't bring up Red Hot Chili Peppers, which.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's his Stadium Arcadium, clearly. Yeah.
We summoned John Frusciante back to the band, by the way.
That was my favorite song of the year.
Absolutely.
We conducted a seance of Stadium Arcadium and got him
me
back
as to our power. Yes. Yeah. We use our power for good, not evil.
Sorry, were you about to talk about Sharon Van Etten or something? Or no?
Excellent. Because like in terms of, it's funny because like everybody else, I love that Sharon Van Etten record, Remind Me Tomorrow. So amazing, such a different sound for her. And it's funny because it goes for early 80s Springsteen production. Basically, it goes to one aspect of Springsteen's career that basically nobody, including him, has any nostalgia for. It's like, back in the days when people really did think Born in the USA was a brilliantly produced album, which like people seem to stop believing like very, 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 very soon. But it's funny that you listen to a song like 17 and it's like somebody thinks Born in the USA is Springsteen's best record. And it focuses very much on that particular sound of his in this really beautiful anthemic 80s way.
Yeah, if she toured with War on Drugs, it would be very confusing.
One of my absolute favorite albums of the year was the Mark Ronson album. I think that was so good. I think every song on there was brilliant. And I'm just like a huge Mark Ronson fan generally. And so I was really excited that he wanted to make this like heartbreak disco album. And there's like a suite of songs with this new singer, Yubba, that are great. Find You Again with Camila Cabello is brilliant. Like, I think every song on there, there's a great Angel Olsen song, True Blue. It's very good.
Nothing Breaks Like a Heart is so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I mean, it's just like a really solid album from him. I love his albums, and I think he's one of my absolute favorite producers, and it's a really fun sort of heartbreak disco.
What's your favorite from it?
I think Find You Again with the great bridge where it's just like, go to therapy twice a week. Heaven breaks like a heart.
I completely missed this album entirely. I just
it's
didn't
so
listen
good.
To it.
Yeah.
I will have to go back to that. Do we have a Charlie Bliss fan?
But that record's great.
Break that one down a little bit for us.
It's a super sad 20-something pop punk breakup album, raised on Blink-182 sort of like sensibility, but with these really heartfelt songs. That song Chat Room is super intense. It's a band that has its own sound in a way that they're, you know, very capable of doing very poppy songs, and they'd be fine if they just did that. But with this, they went the extra level toward doing like really like serious heartbreaking songs.
We've talked about Billie Eilish a lot on the show, but we should just say it obviously really was her year in many ways. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how those songs feel also like they've been around for a million years at this point.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, the album itself is really great and just everything about it. You know, Bad Guy is definitely the biggest hit from it and has done really well. But I think, like, You Should See Me in a Crowd and When the Party's Over were also so brilliant. And, I mean, I think my two favorite songs from the album.
Yeah, and, you know, we started off talking a bit about Lil Nas X, but it is kind of amazing that, you know, music is still a place where, you know, this young person with just their own sound, their own imagination is able to come along and like, you know, capture the imagination of such an audience with just, you know, their eccentricities and originalities. It's a beautiful and inspiring thing to see.
Mm-hmm. And how blatant
and again, that's something we've talked about before, but how blatant the sort of SoundCloud rap influences are, and how interestingly she incorporated them into a, you know, a sort of more accessible. Yeah, it shows, like, you don't know where influences are going to land. You don't know who's going to make the next hit. It's all super fascinating, and a hopeful thing is, I think, what you're getting at, Rob.
Yeah, hopeful. For an album that is not necessarily big on hope or other, you know, positive emotions, but also just the idea that pop is still, like, the place in pop culture where eccentrics do their work is, to me, like, that's an inspiring thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved seeing kids embrace, like, a proud weirdo. Again, I think that that's also a really positive thing. The weird alternative thing being the biggest thing is, for us Gen Xers, feels nice, I think. It feels like a thing we want.
Validating would not be too extreme a statement. One of my favorite music memories of this year, it was my niece's high school graduation. It was the night before the graduation, and her friends are sitting around the campfire, and they're all graduating from high school the next day, and, like, they've got a couple of guitars, and they're just singing all the songs from the Billie Eilish album as if they're folk songs, and they do all those songs. They all know them. They have all worked out harmonies to them. It's just kind of, it's one of those albums that is full of standards. Yeah. You know, I feel like this is a record that's going to be a template for what follows in the 2020s.
Yeah.
I genuinely hope so. So this has been today's Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm Brian Hyatt. I had in the studio, I was lucky enough to have in the studio again, Brittany Spanos and Rob Sheffield. We'll be back next week here on SiriusXM's Volume, Channel 106. In the meantime, we are a podcast. Download us as a podcast. Subscribe to us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Maybe leave us a nice review on iTunes. And as always, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.